Technorama episode 541, left, right, up, down, A, B.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, I'm looking for that documentary about what happened at Blockbuster.
Over there, in the media corner.
Are we still allowed to use this clip?
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here, your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time watching, viewing, listening, whatever you do
absorbing.
With us.
Absorbing.
Wait, no. Wait, what did the board
consuming.
Do? They
assimilate?
Assimilate, yes.
Oh, wow.
Your first time assimilating with us. Thank you.
I was like, did he just send me Borg? Yeah, he did.
If you're a return assimilant, assimile? Wait, what would we think? What would someone being assimilated be?
Let's go with a simile.
A simulacrum?
Maybe.
We appreciate you coming back and giving us your time. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me is my Thor, Craig. Yeah, that's it. How are you, Craig?
Captain America, you know, they kind of... Actually, I'm doing great. I'm actually getting really... I'm starting to get excited about Dragon Con.
As am I. But I have many other things to focus on that are work-related at the moment. I can't get my excitement meter way yet.
Well, it's just that everybody's starting to talk about it. You know, we got our couple of groups, you know, going. We got our shows we're doing there. And things are starting to move, and it's getting exciting.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, fortunately, things are falling into place. And thank you to Clinton Alvord from Comedy Forecast to just by keeping these status meetings going. We are planning two shows. We've got Technorama Comedy Forecast and Friends at 8:30 p.m.
Wait, shouldn't you do this in chronological order?
I am. What show came first?
Not that kind of chronic. No, the schedule. So the topic is first.
I go by plate tectonics time frame.
Well, then we'll be here all night long.
All right, at 7 p.m. in the Hilton Galleria 2 and 3 is our new podcast that we launched about a year ago. The topic is Trek. We are part of the Trek panel, and we are going to have a wonderful show. We're very excited about this one.
Yeah.
Promise me, we won't let you down. And then when that is done, so from 7 to 8 o'clock, we'll be doing the topic is Trek. We walk across the hall to Galleria 6. At 8:30, we do Technorama Comedy Forecast and Friends, which we've done in the past, but this will be all new content. So if you want a double feature... This is
that was my line.
I know, that's a good line.
Three hosts, two shows, one big time.
And no cover charge. There we go. Let's just work our way down. 3-2-1-0.
Yeah, that's right.
And a 1-0-1 at the end.
And zero guarantees.
Looking forward to seeing you at DragonCon if you are headed there. If not, hey, this might be your excuse to go. And we've got the parade on Saturday morning, which is coming together nicely. We've got some new cast members from Futurama joining us. We've got Melinda. I'm trying to remember her name now. Our new Leela. Craig's looking. I apologize. Miranda? I can't remember. What's that?
I just know that it's in our group, the ass end of the parade.
Yes, we have a Facebook group where we communicate all these things, including the rules of the parade. We have Leela, Marina. Is that what it was? Marina.
Yeah.
Kyle is not going as Fry again. Craig will be Fry once again, and Kyle will be going as Zap, or is he Kip? I can't remember. So we got a Zap and a Kip. And we're working on it. Or is Gary going to be Zap? I haven't quite figured this out, and I'm supposed to organize this thing.
You know what?
It doesn't matter.
I'm just looking forward to everybody showing up.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. What do you say so we get on with the history thing?
You know what's funny is when everybody comes, we're going to end up meeting at the same spot. We're going to end up having the same conversations that we did last year, and then we'll do it all again in 2019.
That's half the fun.
It's like Christmas.
I have a new bald appliance and new makeup things to apply and try. So this could be a wonderful new experience or
just like Christmas.
Horrifically. Yeah. We'll see. Now I got to get up even earlier to apply the makeup. Hey. Oh, let's do the history thing, shall we? All right. One other quick announcement. If there are technical surprises in the show, it's because we have new hardware and software in the studio. We've done some upgrades and had to do some shifting around of machines. So it wouldn't be Technorama without a little duct tape and chicken wire. I mean, poultry fencing to hold this thing together. And
I like how you call it technical surprises.
Yes. We did a test on Friday night. Things looked pretty good. We've got enough CPU to spare now, so that's not the issue. It's really, did Chuck hook up all the wires and plug in all the software parts correctly? That's what it's up to, so that we can bring you this hour or so of entertainment. Let us begin with the history thing. All right, pushing the first button.
Tomato, tomato. Okay.
Here we go.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, the band is back. On this day in history for August 8th, 2018, this is the 220th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 145 days remaining in 2018. It was on this date in 1576 that the cornerstone of Tycho Brahe's Orenburg Observatory is laid on the island of Hven.
Heaven.
Heaven must be a place on earth.
Heaven. August 8th, 1585, John Davis enters Cumberland Sound in search of the Northwest Passage.
Wasn't John Davis on that old show, Real People? Different John Davis. Not that John Davis.
That's right.
And he had a morning talk show or something. Also today in 1786, Mont Blanc, the French on the French-Italian border, is climbed for the first time by Jacques Balmont and Dr. Michel Gabriel Picard.
And Thomas Edison receives a patent for his mimeograph on this date in 1876.
And childhood sniffing begins.
Actually, it's just fun. It's just fun saying mimeograph.
I named an application Mimeo because it did a bunch of data copying. I thought it was a very creative name.
Sure.
110 years ago today, Wilbur Wright makes his first flight at a race course in Le Mans, France. It was the Wright brothers' first public flight.
August 8th, 1929, the German airship of Graf Zeppelin begins a round-the-world flight.
Was that it? I thought there was more to that one.
That's it. Hey, there's a period there.
Okay, that's it. On August 8th, 1946, the first flight of the Convair B-36, the world's first mass-produced nuclear weapon delivery vehicle. Yikes. The heaviest mass-produced piston engine aircraft with the longest wingspan of any military aircraft and the first bomber with intercontinental range. Sounds like a sales pitch on a car lot. This is the first bomber with intercontinental range.
And it was 55 years ago today, the great train robbery in England. A gang of 15 train robbers steal 2.6 million pounds. It's pretty heavy.
Yeah, they're strong.
And bankments. By the way, your app or whatever it came from.
I know.
Great train robbery.
I didn't do all my complete editing.
That's all right.
It glues pieces of text together, and sometimes they don't make as much sense after they're glued together. It was on this. It's right. I paid dearly with blood from my fingertips. It was also on this date in 1969 that a zebra crossing in London. Oh, I guess over there would be a zebra. Photographer Lane McMillan takes the iconic photo that at Zebra Crossing in London. That photographer Ian McMillan takes the iconic photo that becomes the cover image of the Beatles album, Abbey Road. Someone forgot their shoes.
It was 49 years ago today that the Manson family commits the Tate murders.
Wow. Time flies. And Charlie Manson is still in prison.
No, he's not. He's dead.
Did he die?
He's dead. He's gone.
Oh, well, he died in prison.
Go look that up in your history.
President Richard Nixon, in a nationwide television address, announces his resignation from office of the President of the United States effective noon the next day on this date in 1974. I remember that.
Hmm. It was also on this date in 1989 that the space shuttle program STS-28 mission, the space shuttle Columbia, takes off on a secret 5-day military mission.
Another clumsy editing job by me. Apologies.
Yeah.
18 years ago today, in the year 2000, Confederate submarine H.L. Hunley is raised to the surface after 136 years in the ocean floor and 30 years after its discovery by undersea explorer E. Lee Spence. Happy birthday goes out on this date to American physicist and academic Nobel Prize laureate Ernest Lawrence, born on this date in 1901.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't paying attention. Paul Dirac, English-American physicist and academic Nobel Prize laureate, was born on the same date in 1902.
I think there's a special on Netflix about him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
English animator and producer John David Wilson was born 99 years ago today.
And Richard Anderson, the American actor-producer, was born 92 years ago today.
Not the one who played MacGyver. That's Richard Dean Anderson.
That Richard Dean Anderson?
Yeah, otherwise he would be a 92-year-old MacGyver. Also born on the same date in 1931, English physicist, mathematician, and philosopher Roger Penrose. Ooh, I know that name. He was on Dr. Carl's podcast not too long ago.
Okay. American director, producer, screenwriter Donald D. Belisario is 83 today.
He made lots of TV. I believe he did Knight Rider, but I could be off on that one. Someone's going to have to fact check me. I know he did a lot of shows. Also turning 81 today is American actor and director Dustin Hoffman. He's 81 today. He'll be 81.
He's a good driver. English chemist and academic Jack Baldwin is 80 today.
Also born on the same date in 1948, Russian engineer and astronaut. Oh, yes, I get this one. Svetlana Savitskaya. I remember her coming up a few years ago.
There you go. An American actor, Keith Carradine, is 69 today.
Is he Kung Fu?
Yeah.
No, that's David Carradine.
I know, it's his brother.
Oh, man, the band is leaving. American actor and director Don Most. Oh, man. Born on this date in 1953.
And also turning 57 today is British-Irish musician, singer-songwriter, The Edge.
The Edge. That's the way it was on this day in Tech Around with Calendar. Bye.
Yay!
Not quiet.
By the way, Donald Belisario was the writer of like Magna P.I.
That's what
Tales of the Golden Monkey, Airwolf, Quantum Leap, JAG, NCIS, blah, 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 a bunch of stuff.
No Knight Rider.
No, he didn't do Knight Rider.
Okay.
I can see the dude typing and doing the paper.
Oh, that's,
over
Yeah.
I can't think of it.
Yeah. Yes. At the end of every show, he would be typing and he threw the paper.
Glenn Larson. Oh, my God. Yes. Glenn Larson.
That wasn't Glenn Larson.
It was Glenn Larson. He'd go, yeah, it was.
You sure?
Uh-huh.
Okay. You say
pretty
so.
Sure.
I'm going to challenge you on that one. No. Come on, chat room. Help us out.
Somebody speak.
Who's the one at the end of the show where he was with his... And they'd say, good night, Mr. Whatever it was. Not the show's produced by Sit Ubu, Sit. Oof, go to Ubu. That was another totally different producer. All right. Well, they're looking. I'm going to do the listener birthdays. August 8th is Pip Ballantyne. T, you've got a few days here if you're watching or listening. Happy birthday to you, Philippa. Matt Coe, former karate friend, is on the 9th, as is Julia Pose. Doesn't say what year, but she does have a link to Technorama promo on here. She has turned out to be a very creative young woman. I've seen some of her work. She's got a website, and her dad gave me permission to look at her website. So, just so you don't think I'm like spying on a 9-year-old. She's about 21 or 22 now. We've been doing the show so long. These kids have grown up.
I know.
It's crazy. I think we're going to have second-generation podcasters soon.
We should.
Sam Martin is on the 10th, and the 11th is two birthdays. One is David Brewer, also known as Tyrion the Imp, And of course, our good friend Steve Wozniak.
Yeah.
He's a good
friend of the show.
Friend of the show. One of our early interviews.
By the way, it was Stephen J. Cannell.
That's it. I knew it because the letter would form the letter C at the end of that animated logo thing. Ooh. Yeah. That's right. I knew it did. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Was that you or was that the chat that came?
I did it. Okay. I found it.
Yes. Yeah, Stephen J. Cannell. How many shows did we watch with that on it?
Yeah.
Sit, Ubu, sit.
Too many. Way too many.
If you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, you can go over to chuckchat.com/wiki. Link is displayed right there on the bottom of the screen. If you're watching, if you're not, it's still chuckchat.com/wiki.
I'm not watching it, but yes.
I don't watch this garbage.
There it is. I see it now.
Okay, we got time for another. Let's do a news story or two. First one is.
Good news, everybody.
Is this good news? Okay, I've reorganized my icons, so they should be easier to find.
Good news, nobodies.
Oh, that just hurts my throat.
Hey, I don't know if it's good news or not, but it certainly is controversial.
I think it's good news. I don't... Let's go on with this. Why don't you read this one?
Okay. So we're talking about the 3D printed gun plans off the internet, and apparently some states are joining in on a lawsuit to keep the plans off of the internet, but I think the bill's already been rung, but we'll see. August 1st, Defense Distributed was set to upload designs of 3D printed guns for public to buy and download. But the day before, a Seattle judge temporarily blocked their release after seven states and Washington, D.C. sued the company and the State Department. Today, 11 more states have joined the legal battle to stop firearm plans from being sold online. According to the filing, amended complaint added California, Colorado, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois. I sound like I'm doing the capital song. Iowa, Minnesota, North Carolina, Rhode Island, Vermont, Virginia, to the list of states' attorneys general opposing the release of the files. Per the Brady Campaign and Center to Prevent Gun Violence, the preliminary injunction hearing has been scheduled for August 21st, and the temporary restraining order has been extended until the 28th of August. So the lawsuit and temporary block are the latest in years-long battle between the firm Defense Distributed, which started publishing 3D printed gun designs online in 2013. The opponents of the government and the government public sector. The State Department initially told the company to stop as it considers the firearm plans to violate international arms regulations policies. Defense Distributed fired back with a lawsuit in 2015, alleging that the files were protected under free speech rights, and the case wound its way through the courts.
Mm-hmm.
So the Supreme Court declined to hear the case at the beginning of the year, but in a reversal, the Department of Justice chose to settle with the firm in April and let the company begin publishing designs online. The Brady Center and two other gun control organizations attempt to keep the plans offline, but a federal judge blocked their efforts a week before they were set to go live.
Mm.
Last came the state attorneys general and the Seattle judge's blocking the order, which was held up on their online sale, at least for now.
Which so has they're selling order. These plans. It's not like now, they're giving them away.
They're intending to sell them, yes.
Okay.
Huh. But apparently they can't at the moment, or legally they can't.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't know. To be honest with you, somebody else is going to print them, figure it out how to print it.
Hmm.
So I'm.
Do you need a license to buy the online plans? Is the next question.
No. It's a 3D. It's just you're just buying the
data. This is a weapon that you can create. It's not traceable. Might even get through security. I'm not sure.
Well, you know, you still got to have a couple of metal pieces in it to actually operate. So you have to pop them in like pins to hit the bullet. But you also have to have the bullet. So I don't think you're going to be walking through a metal detector with it and have it work. But what if you had something on your keychain that you can pop off? And so if you go through a metal detector and run your keys around in the bowl,
like the Klingons had with their shoes that they assembled the weapon to get out of prison.
That's, yes, that's very realistic view. Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence. I just kind of, I don't know. I don't like the idea of, I don't know. I don't know what to think, honestly. What do you think?
I don't like the idea of too much government control, but without some government control, things get off the rails real easy. And this is one of those borderline cases where I'm thinking, don't we have, I think there's a need to intervene in this case. I'm going to go out there and say, don't people have a better business plan than I'm going to sell 3D printing plans for a gun? Sell 3D printing plans for like a glucose meter or something useful.
Or a unicorn. I don't know. Like I said, I'm kind of on the fence. I'm with you. I don't want the government in everything, but at the same time, we're talking about.
There are lives on the line here. Make it an automated cat food feeder or something useful. Like, why do we need a 3D printed gun? Does the world really need that? Is there a big enough market to run your business off of?
Apparently. Somebody made it. I mean, there's a market for it. It was called the Silk Road. Remember, that was the
black... Yeah, there's always a market for weapons. But is this... If I were somebody looking for... to get weapons, it's usually pretty quick. You know, I want a crate of 50 Glocks. You know how long it would take to print these guns? I'll have your gun for you tomorrow morning. There's one.
Yeah. Remember Homer Simpson? He went to go buy a gun. And the guy said, okay, come back in 3 days. 3 days, but I'm mad now.
Exactly.
3 days, but I'm mad now.
All right. Our next story is all about iconic planting hunting Kepler telescope wakes up and phones home.
Yay.
Yay. It's alive. It's online. This is what we've been waiting for. Kepler, which has discovered about 70% of the 3,800 known exoplanets to date, woke up from a 4-week hibernation yesterday and has begun beaming data home just as planned. NASA official announced today from a report. And this comes from Slashdot. Kepler has been sleeping. He's been listening to Technorama.
Yeah, woke up.
Kepler has been sleeping in an attempt to save thruster fuel, which is running very, very low. Mission team members wanted to make sure that the spacecraft had enough propellant left to orient its antenna toward Earth for yesterday's data dump. Far-flung NASA spacecraft send information back to mission controllers via the agency's Deep Space Network. This is the Deep Space Network, network. A system of radio dishes around the globe. The sun orbiting Kepler's latest allotted DSN window opened yesterday, agency officials have said. So it's back online. Can we go hunting planets, or has it been hunting planets and just needs to dump the data?
Well, it said it went to sleep. I was kind of surprised by that. I figured they'd have it running 24/7 looking for stuff.
Yeah, not if it's low on fuel and whatever else. I don't know.
I looked at the previous article. It says Kepler telescope to send NASA its last images. And this is from July 8th.
Well, if its fuel is running really, really low, it's probably got to get rid of its data and then it's going to die.
Why would they plan on
send up a refueling mission?
Make it a little more. It should make it a little more resilient. It hadn't been up there that long, has it?
3,800 exoplanets. It's been there a while.
No, the planets have.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's do a real quick search. When did Kepler launch? When did Kepler live? No. Kepler launched? May 7, 2009. I think we got our money's worth.
Let's look at the Mars rovers. They're still, one of them's still kicking.
Sort of. I think they had a big global dust storm.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Or they're in a big global dust storm right now.
Yeah.
Kind of like Phoenix.
Actually, the dust storm is encompassing the whole planet.
Yeah. Kind of like Phoenix.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, look, Phoenix looks just like Mars.
One of our customers contacted me today from Sweden. He said, I hope you're okay after the dust storm. I said, which one? We've had like six in the last month.
Which one?
He said, well, made big news over here in Sweden. I said, well.
Did it?
Yeah. I said, yeah, we're fine. We just had some dirt and leaves and whatnot in the pool. Some trees down in the neighborhood, but nothing.
He's all worried about you all weekend. Wow. Actually,
Brian Brown had a tree fall on his house. He's out of his house right now.
He did. Yeah. And that was terrible. He said he was looking out the back window and wondering, wow, this storm looks bad. And a tree fell on his house. That's what he said.
Wishing we could.
Facebook post, true story.
He called us up in hopes that we had vacancy for a while in our guest house, but unfortunately we don't for as long as he needs. We already have people booked.
We do, Brian, but not for you. Sorry.
We'll let you outbid the other people.
Told him to come to South Carolina. Yeah.
So best of luck to him and his wife, Mary, as they get their house back in order ASAP.
I know I'm making a joke about it a little bit, but yeah, it's not, it's a bad thing. The picture looked terrible. Yeah. I'm just glad that they're okay. They could just seriously, if it fell the right way, it could have. You know, they're in the wrong part of the house. Well, it could have been a problem.
We had some serious power outages as well. Our power was out for a couple of hours last Monday night. And even though it was right around sunset, it's still hot out there. And without AC, our house crept up in temperature. By the time it came back on at about 9:20, 9:40, whatever it was quite toasty in the house.
I'm sure it was. That's why I live in South Carolina.
Where it's also hot.
Well, yeah, it has been a little hot.
And humid.
Okay, you got me on the humidity.
I'm glad we've upped our insulation last winter. That certainly helped
just
drag things out.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's when you go, all right, Donna, it's time to go out to dinner.
In Flagstaff.
Right. That's right.
All right, next article. We have high contrast black and white images. Ooh, these are the world's first full color 3D x-rays, and they're kind of freaky to look at. They look more these are really interesting.
I was just gonna say, when Harrison was when we were getting ultrasounds for Harrison when he was still fetus.
Was like the early days of 3D, wasn't it?
Well, that's what I was going to say, was we didn't have any 3D ultrasounds, but I asked about it because I just saw a thing on TV where they were doing black and white 3D. And I was like, I really want to see that, but it just wasn't very prevalent. It wasn't out. I mean, you know, it was very expensive, so only certain places had it, you know, the university, a few universities.
Now it's pretty common.
Now it's pretty common, and then now we have
3D x-rays.
That's right.
A high contrast black and white image of your bones is an effective tool for spotting fractures or breaks. But after 120 years or so, x-ray imaging is getting a remarkable update with 3D full color images that reveal far more than just the bones inside you. These images
will soul.
Yours is black.
Like my mood ring.
Yours is missing. Traded it at the crossroads. Oh, wait, that's Supernatural. Sorry, you haven't seen that show. These images will improve what a doctor can diagnose without cutting you open. The traditional approach to imaging the inside of a patient involves blasting them with x-rays. Well, it's not so much blasting anymore. They're a little more prescriptive than they were 120 years ago.
Yeah.
This electromagnetic radiation has a shorter wavelength than visible light, so it can easily pass through the soft tissue, but it has more trouble passing through the harder materials like bones. On the other side of your body, a sensor or film produces an image based on the intensity of the x-rays that make it through, thus revealing what's inside you. A New Zealand company called Mars Bioimaging has developed a new type of medical imaging scanner that works in a similar fashion, but borrows technology developed for the Large Hadron Collider. Wow.
What?
Yeah, it's CERN.
I didn't expect that to pop up in this article.
We're bombarding you with subatomic particles, smashing them against your bones and seeing what... Look! I've discovered the Higgs boson in your bones. To produce far more detailed results, the MidiPix 3 chip works similar to the sensor in your digital camera, but detects and counts the particles hitting each pixel when a shutter opens. Interestingly enough, you know, the last few times I've been to the dentist, they don't use film anymore. It's all that X-ray receiver chip, which I thought was really cool. So then you get digital pictures.
Yeah. I did some computer work for Animal Hospital that Kim used to work at. And they had, it's been a few years now, but they finally got rid of their X-ray, their traditional one with the chemicals.
Yeah.
And they got, and they went with digital. So it's like they do the scan and then in the hallway, they can immediately show the, the owner,
the victim,
images right there and they can go over it. They don't have to wait for development. And
did you know you own the rights to those images? If you want, you can ask them for a copy and post them on Facebook.
Yeah. It's just like you're, when Harrison was being ultrasound, and they, she misidentified him as a girl. And she said, okay, I'm not really 100%, but I think we got a girl here. She says, go. She told Kim to go drink a Coke, Dr. Pepper, or something like that. And after about 30 minutes to an hour, come back.
Yeah.
And she would do the scan again. Well, she did. And she goes, whoa. It is a boy because the caffeine got him to move and stuff. So look at there. There's his winky. So I made her print it out for me. It says winky.
You share that at his wedding ceremony?
Oh, yes. Oh, I've got it saved physically and digitally. I've got it in several places. Winky.
Have a happy honeymoon night.
Yeah.
Well, this is pretty cool. I had another thought, but I lost track of it. So we're going to take a break so my brain can replenish its CPU cycles and irradiate itself. And we will be right back. What do we got? We've got a Remember When. We've got a couple of media corners and an interesting question of the week. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Dog Days of Podcasting is an annual challenge for podcasters and listeners alike. In the month of August, the Dog Days of Summer, a group of intrepid creators gather to produce a show a day for a full month plus. It's the loosest rules of any challenge you'll ever find, so join anytime if you'd like to be a part of the challenge. If you'd like to listen to all the shows, you can find the list of participants, as well as the master feed, at dogdaysofpodcasting.com. There are dozens of podcasters participating this year. The only thing that would make it more fun is you. So come along to dogdaysofpodcasting.com and cool off with some chill podcasts.
Geek Thoughts.
I'm glad they finally got Wi-Fi in here.
You know, that last one is, people are probably going, yeah, so?
Hey, you know what? Inspiration comes from all kinds of places.
It's funny because that was a big thing, you know, when we did this 12 years ago or so. We
made that. Yeah, there was no Wi-Fi on the toilet.
No. Cell signal was even questionable.
Right.
Oh, that's too funny. Still works. Yeah. We'll have to think of where else we get Wi-Fi. Alrighty, more news from Slashdot. Would you care to notify us?
More news on the Slashdot.
Slash me.
I think you're going a little further.
Did I jump to the media corner?
Yeah. You remember when?
Oh, I jumped right over the remember when, and even worse, the shout out to the chat room. Shame on me.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but.
All right. Scott Tyler's watching. Craig's watching. We had Tim Elliott, John Miller Jr., of course.
Okay, so we're jumping into that.
Crazy Joe Fiore. Well, that's right after the break. It says shout out to the chat room.
You're right.
Crazy Joe's out there. Who else do we have? I thought I saw Tim Elliott. Could be wrong.
Yeah. There's Scott, Joe.
Yeah, John.
John.
We got those people.
I'm Griffin.
We want to see you guys there. We're here every Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern. Well, most Sunday nights.
John Clifford.
Do we have John? John Clifford or Tom Clifford?
Russell Baxley, one of my wood badge.
This is where you see people I don't.
Yeah.
I see dead people.
I see lively listeners. All right. So anyway, tonight, Remember When. You going to play the music?
Yes, we must play the Remember When. It is currently green? Yeah, we'll go with that.
There we go.
There it is.
And well-oiled machine. That's all I got to say about tonight. So it's the future, the futuristic invisible wall that was supposed to protect entire towns from missiles in 1959, Trump would be ecstatic.
Where was this when I was playing Missile Command?
You were the wall. You were the wall.
Manual effort.
Yeah. So when you hear about the concept of missile defenses in space, your first thought might be Ronald Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative, more commonly known as Star Wars.
Yes.
But ideas for an invisible missile shield in the sky were much older than the 80s. And just an example, we have this Sunday comic strip from 1959, which imagined the missile defenses of the future. We've looked at countless comics from Sunday strips, Closer Than We Think, that's the name of the title, illustrated by author Roddenball. The strip ran from 58 to 63, and it's one of the coolest artifacts showing how people of that era imagined the future. Roddenball drew about jetpacks, the video phones, the climate-controlled domes, the computerized desk.
Oh, that'll never happen.
Yeah, never. And the space farming. Oh, he didn't get the standing desks. That's where he missed. And space farming, and that was just around the corner. But December 6, 1959, the edition of the strip was focused on something a little less wholesome. This time it was about missile defense. The text from the edition of Closer Than We Think, name of the title there, said that a special magic wall. Oh, now he's talking about magic.
Harry Potter was involved?
Yeah, that's right.
Or Wakanda, I'm not sure. This only works if you live in Wakanda.
Actually, he predicted Wakanda, that's right.
There we go.
So the same research that will ultimately produce interstellar rocket ships, will also make possible a kind of protective wall in the sky to keep enemy craft away from a defensive position. At least that's what jet propulsion expert Eugene Sanger of the University of Stuttgart, I missed the G, testified before a congressional committee. Photon rays would flow from ultraviolet searchlights and create a belt of high energy in the sky.
Okay, and everybody gets a good suntan.
Yeah, any flying object passing across that belt or even a couple of hundred miles away, wow, it's a good range.
Be sure to clear the airspace and no planes flying through that wall.
Hey, my Wi-Fi can't even get that far. It would be destroyed in a fraction of a second. Thus, technical aviation progress itself might finally eliminate aviation as an instrument of war.
Uh-huh. Which
none of that really came to true. But
yeah. Never mind the commercial flights that happen to be going near that. Clear the airspace. We're turning on the lights.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool, though. Yeah, it does remind me of the wall around Wakanda.
You have a walled city. You have missiles coming in. You have ultraviolet missiles destroyed. Searchlight. Yep. Ultraviolet lights. And a plane making a U-turn.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, one more shout out. Hey, Gary.
Gary joined us? Gary joined us. We'll be seeing Lindros Gary in a few
the
weeks.
House. All right.
Yep.
So our protective wall is not working because Gary got through.
Oh, ow. Gary's always welcome.
Yes, of course.
We turned down the ultraviolet lights for you. We turned out a lot of things for you.
Yeah.
Want to give a thank you to our patrons. I believe we have our Patreon music. Yes! This show is brought to you by you, and some of those hardware and software upgrades that we did are a big thanks to you because you help offset the cost of running a podcast. It's not just hosting and DNS and domain names, all that good stuff.
Although that's all part of it.
That's all part of it. And it gets a little pricey when you start throwing in video and lighting and all this kind of stuff. But you guys really help make this a little more palatable to the family budget. This is done on a family budget. And huge thanks to my wife for letting me get away with this craziness. And also helping with the video stream.
You should thank her now.
Yes. We're thanking Patreon. We should put her as patron number one.
That's right.
But for now, we have patron number one is listed as Kyle Nishioka. And number two is Abner Braverman. Then Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Mega Podtastic, Night Gig Studios. Thank you to all you guys. There are different levels of donations. Some people are donating $2 an episode, and some are donating one. Gary Lindros, who just got through our ultraviolet wall. He's also in there. John Clifford, he deserves to be through our ultraviolet wall. He's on the inside of the curtain.
John Clifford?
John Clifford. Leon. That Leon? No, that John Noble. Chris MC, Alexis Duran, Saturday Morning Media, we're just messing with you. Steve Therian, Jorga Schrauen, and of course, John Miller Jr. You can still be on this list if you go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast, like my lovely assistant has put on the titler.
Whatever your level of FOMO is, let it go and come be a patron.
We have one person who's donating $1.01. 101. I thought that was pretty good.
That's right. Yeah, I remember seeing that. That's right. That's cool.
In return, we do have special content in a special feed for these special people that Craig and I just turn on the mics and we talk about any number of random topics. And this week, we don't know what we're doing yet. We recorded right after this, but we release it right before this. So it's all timey-wimey.
We do have a plan.
We do have a plan. What do you know our topic this week?
You just said what it was. It was we just turn it on and talk about some random stuff. That's our plan.
That's our plan. We don't have a topic.
That's our business model.
All right. So thank you very much to all of these people. And, it just humbles me to no end to know that you are willing to donate your hard-earned cash to help support this. And not only with your time, but with your dollars, and that means a lot to us. And after
now,
13
your dollars
years,
is great, but your cents we're not sure about.
Oh man, right, that's clever.
Wait, maybe I shouldn't insult our patrons.
No. Wow, that should be our next Patreon T-shirt.
These are your dollars. We question your cents.
Okay. Wow. Very well played. Have we played this entire song? We talked through the whole song. I don't think we've done that yet.
That's the tail end of the other band. They actually
the Metal Imperial March song. Yeah. Gotta love it. All right. Media Corner time now.
Now.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
Your turn.
All right, so I saw this article because I saw another one that said RSS was dead.
I've been hearing about that as well, but yet and still plenty of traffic coming through my Feedly reader.
I know. Well, my thoughts are kind of summed up, I think, in this article. But the one article I saw, I said RSS was dead, and I went, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, it's like the wiring behind the panel, so to speak, for things. But anyway, let me get through this article, and we'll talk about it. So over at Slashdot, Brian Schrader, an independent software developer, writes, it's a little over 5 years since Google Reader shut down, and the world of RSS readers was tossed into the junk drawer of collective memory.
Has it been 5 years already?
I guess I really liked Google Reader. It was
yeah.
Good.
Although I'm liking Feedly as well.
Oh yeah. Anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. But looking back on it today, I'd actually argue that RSS and feeds as a whole never really disappeared. Only the feed readers did. In building Pine, which the mail reader from command line, and as a longtime feed reader user. I've been pleasantly surprised over the last 5 years to see that most sites still have RSS feeds. Sure, Facebook and Twitter don't support them.
Ooh.
But I think Facebook did at one point, maybe early on. Anyway, and Twitter don't support them. But YouTube, Reddit, Squarespace, WordPress, and so many more do by default. YouTube does? I'm going to have to look into that one.
Yeah, I got to double check on that one as well. That's interesting.
So So feeds of all kinds still exist. Of course, he didn't mention podcasts.
A lot of podcasts are hosted on WordPress.
That's true. I just thought about that when I said that. So I one-upped you in my head.
Yeah, fat load of good that does. Doesn't matter there. To the judges on the scoreboard.
You're already in there. All right, the foundations were already laid and the hard work is done. RSS feeds have become a standard and were built into the tools that we use to make the web today. It is almost as if we laid the tracks and built the trains for the Transcontinental Railroad, but we've forgotten how to sell the tickets. But again, I would look at RSS feeds as more of the, like I said, the wiring in the server room, you know, between the equipment. It's there. Everybody's using them. You may not be totally, maybe obvious to you, but they're there.
Well, it's also nice to know that the number of sites that it's not like they're slowly in decline as we get more news sites. They have to recognize that a lot of people still consume via RSS. So that's a valid delivery mechanism. It's a bit like saying, you know what? I'm going to start a podcast, but yeah, I don't think YouTube is going to work so well. So I'm not going to put my content there. You want as many delivery channels to get your information. So you get the eyeballs. So you can attract the advertisers. That's a business model. If you suddenly cut out a channel like RSS, what did you expect people to come to your site every hour, every day? What? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not automated. We're in the age where the information comes to you. RSS is still a beautiful way to make that happen.
Well, I think as far as reading blogs and stuff like that, yes, I think you're right. But I would also argue that some things like Google News, the Google feed, Newsstand.
Yeah.
It was Newsstand. That's Google News. And it kind of services a bunch of articles. I don't need to necessarily know that they come from an RSS feed or anything like that, but I'm sure they do on the back end. But I just get articles based on recommendations. And I think a lot of people are getting those kind of feed also, where things are getting recommended to them. Facebook's doing that, pushing stuff, articles that it thinks you're interested in. But still, RSS is very viable because, again, all these podcasts, how do you think they get to iTunes? They get to iTunes through an RSS feed.
Yeah.
You have to submit it. My podcatcher. But, you know, even like you said, Feedly, that's another good example. It's a somewhat sort of successor to Google Reader.
It's a third party RSS reader that allows you to make your own groups. And say, this feed belongs to humor, this feed belongs to science, this feed belongs to, and then you can break it down like that. Available in browser, available in number of local clients on iOS, on Android. We use it. It's a very integral part of the way we put this show together. Because during the week, I'll go through Feedly and I'll say, I'd scan the headlines. And that way, you know, it's nice when somebody says, hey, did you know that Apple broke $1 trillion? It was like in 15 different sites this week. It was crazy.
I know, right?
And I can just save an article. I can tag it. I can star it. We can put it in a list that we review for The Topic is Trek. We can put it on a list we review for Technorama. And then at the end of the week, when it's time for showtime and we start filtering through the tagged stories, we've gone through, to do this show, we've literally gone through thousands of articles, pared that down to a few dozen, and then we pick the 6 or 8 that make it into the show. So the only way I can do that with any sense is to go through these articles.
Oh, yeah. I just think for you and I and a lot of people, it makes sense. But I think for the majority, it's that RSS is not the forefront. They don't see that's where a lot of those articles are coming from.
Getting irritating that I am never, I shouldn't say never. That's a bit extreme in the internet days. I don't see myself using this method. It seems like every site has browser notifications. Would you like us to alert you when there's a new article on our site? Oh, heck no. I get enough alerts from Slack, from Skype, from, you know, Amazon, everybody's alerting me these days. I want fewer alerts. Okay, the information has to come to me, but on my terms.
Yeah, there's only like a couple of sites that allow that, and that's like the web version of my text messenger and Todoist and a couple of utilities, not like website. That just aggravates me. I start to scroll and I'm looking and it says, hey, do you want to be notified? No.
No. Never.
It's more of a hassle to say no. It's
right. Angry. Yeah. That's just that's like popover ads from, you know, 1999. It's just going to drive me absolutely nuts until somebody turns it. Chrome needs a feature that says, don't ever show me that pop-up thing.
I think you can't. You can turn that off.
Okay.
By default.
Oh.
And that way that
somebody find it and tell me.
That way, if you want to do that, you can click the secure thing at the top and it says notifications and you can hit allow. But, if you wanted to.
At so least be it's an opt-in. I'll give you that.
I'd rather be opt-in. Yeah. Because I'm going to be honest with you. If I want to see your stuff, I'm going to subscribe to it somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Alrighty. Our next article is...
Glad we solved that.
Yeah, and we didn't... we just confirmed that RSS isn't dead yet.
Yeah. Speaking of not dead yet...
Yes, it is. We reported on this in the last show, that the last Blockbuster store is only moments for this world.
Right. But it's not dead yet.
Okay. There's a documentary offer starting on Kickstarter in Bend, Oregon. Bend, Oregon is the site of the last surviving Blockbuster video store. And now there's a documentary in the works titled The Last Blockbuster, which sounds
starring
like
Seth Rogen.
Starring
Chris
Evans. Anyway, back at the beginning of the year, there were a total of 8 stores that were still open across the country, down from 9,000 back in its heyday. However, the last 7 months, 7 of the stores have all been forced to close, including the ones located in Anchorage, Alaska, that John Oliver and Last Week Tonight donated at all of the Russell Crowe memorabilia to. We reported on this in the last Technorama episode.
Right.
Yeah. Pop Motion Pictures and the filmmaker Taylor Morden are making the last Blockbuster with the help of the internet. The crowdfunding page just went up a little bit before we reported on this. And so far, they've raised nearly $2,000 out of the $20,000 goal. There's still over a month to donate as of this writing. So if you want to see this documentary, get over there and open your wallet. If you donate $2,500 or more, you can even work a shift at the Bend Blockbuster location. Why would I pay $2,500 to work at a Blockbuster? Am I going to be in the movie or not?
Maybe. Maybe your name will be at the end of the credits.
It better be the first in the credits, which seems pretty weird, but might appeal to... It better be in very large type, too.
You know somebody's doing this.
It appeals to those with big pockets and a lot of free time on their hands. For those of you who still love the tactile experience of walking into a video store that a video store offers you, the last Blockbuster will be available on DVD, Blu-ray, streaming, and even VHS. Wow.
That's where the money is going. The $20,000 is to print out or manufacture VHS tapes of this movie.
We'll make sure it's in 4x3 in ugly, grainy quality, too.
Yeah.
Like it's been copied 4 or 5 times. It's important for the rewards on this crowdfunding campaign to be tangible so backers can even get a working membership card.
Is it laminated like they used to?
Yes. At the last surviving Blockbuster video, the streaming business was the nail in the coffin for Blockbuster and all of the video stores across the world, though. In some towns, little mom and pop stores still exist, renting videos and selling overpriced snacks. Now that the Blockbuster experience is coming to a close, people from all over North America are flocking to Bend, Oregon to take their picture in front of the iconic blue and yellow sign. What, Best Buy?
Yeah, Best Buy.
Right. It won't be long before we have the last Best Buy. Suddenly I had Buy More, but that's green and yellow.
Yeah, they buy more.
To spark memories of walking through a video store and looking for those hot new releases, the last Blockbuster is looking to capture that feeling that doesn't really exist anymore. That feeling of walking into a brick-and-mortar establishment to get recommendations from the workers, or even wait around all night to get that last copy of whatever is in-demand movie at the time. Much like Blockbuster video locations, Netflix and Amazon will see their end come in the future as well, though it probably won't be for a while. The last Blockbuster is directed by Taylor Morden and is... His third documentary. His last crowdfunding movie about SKA Music was available or was able to raise over $100,000, which means the documentary should have no problem hitting the $20,000 goal. Morden has already spent the last 9 months interviewing workers at the last remaining stores in North America to capture their stories, and now needs the money to get those stories out into the world. You can help out. The Last Blockbuster is heading over to Kickstarter to donate your project. Follow the links to the show notes at chuckchat.com/technorama. Click on this episode 541, and you'll find our Last Blockbuster story there. So if you really feel compelled to donate a buck or two to them, don't forget, mm-hmm. you can donate to our Patreon as well.
Yeah, that's right. By the way, they are at $3,762 right
All
now.
All right, they're making it. They're getting close.
With 68 backers and 35 days to go.
Would you donate to this one?
No, but I'll look for it on Netflix when it shows up.
I really wanted to say something, but it's not in line with the show. But okay, cheap.
I'm waiting for the 8mm version to come out.
Yeah, so I can put available it on my like the Zapruder film in silent, no audio, just silent.
I want the film strip version.
You have to play your own player piano along with it. And then people are walking through the store getting checked out real fast.
Black and white.
I say it's a talkie.
I'm curious how this store became the last one, because there were so many of them. How it filtered down to this one.
Maybe they'll cover that in the documentary.
Maybe I should.
Has your store weathered the storm?
Yeah.
And how many people still come to that? What is keeping them in business?
I guess enough people.
Why didn't Blockbuster just pull the plug and say, all right, maybe there's got to be some local ownership input to this and say we're still
maybe
viable.
Maybe it's like a franchise kind of thing. Maybe they, yeah.
Well, you look at Toys R Us. You know, they didn't wait till it dwindled down to one store. They just went, you know what? We're pulling the plug. The rest of you guys are done.
Well, they did try to fight bankruptcy, but it didn't quite work.
Most chain stores close en masse, even if it's a little mass.
Huh. Yeah, there's got to be some local ownership, and maybe it does enough business for them to, maybe the rent's cheap. I don't know.
But how is corporate rationalizing this? They must have like two people left in the office.
That's what I was wondering.
The CEO and the bookkeeper.
Yeah, there's like a dude and a fax machine.
Oh, there's a parody video right there. The Last Blockbuster. We could get $100 for that one. Easy.
Yeah.
All right, real quick, we have our question. Didn't we ask this question recently? Our question of the week? This sounds really familiar.
No, but it seems like something we should have talked about before.
Okay. This comes to us from Gizmodo, and they said, what did you get in trouble for at your school's computer lab?
I've got a story.
Left hand on ASDF? Good. Right hand on JKL, and for some reason that semicolon? Congrats, you're on the home position. Everyone learned in their school's computer lab and never used for the rest of their lives. Did you learn other things? Brag a little louder about how going to a private school and why, don't you?
I think they need to pay attention to their grammar.
Yes, they
do. Come back to school for that.
Questionable value to life skills aside, the overactive imagination of children isn't best stimulated by the limited palette of edutainment games like Word Munchers or Type or Learn. Type or die. Oh, God, help us. Mavis. All right. Professional adult people put a room full of children in a room with a lot of unfamiliar expensive hardware. It was an open invitation for hijinks, pranks, and maybe some potential CFAA violations. So there are some stories in here that we invite you to read.
Hey, can I share one real quick? Actually,
did you do some hijinks?
Actually, this is going to be our question of the week. What did you get in trouble for at your high schools or your school?
You may not have got in trouble for it specifically, but did you do anything that was quote unquote off the books, off the reservation?
So I'll tell you. So I had this data processing class during high school, and they got all these computers. I forget the brand, but some off brand, but I was playing around with it at school, and I noticed that in what kind of the BIOS, it had some settings, and you could say, oh, I want this computer to come on at a certain time.
Yeah.
So I told one other kid about it, and we covertly throughout the hour we were there in our class, set all the computers to come on during the next hour because the teacher was adamant about having them turn off. She wanted everybody, okay, shut them down so they can shut them, you know, turn them on at the next class. So they shut them all down, and like about, 15 minutes into the class.
Back when you had to reach around to the backside to hit the power switch.
Well, if you leave it on, you could tell it when to turn off and when to turn on.
Yeah.
So it would automatically, you could hear them all beep at the same time or relatively
even
the same
funnier
time.
Would be turn off in the middle of the next class.
Yeah.
I lost my work. I didn't save to my floppy disk.
Well, I thought about that and I was like, I wouldn't want that to happen, you know, to kill somebody's work. So, especially when you're typing in a big program. But anyway, so what did you do to get in trouble at your first school, at your school's computer lab?
I'm going to have to think about that because most of the stuff that I did was exploratory, but not necessarily wrong. I do recall using not necessarily a sanctioned, I don't know who did this. I was with a group of people. One of them was a year older than me, so it must have been, he was a senior, I was a junior, and we went into the computer lab where they still had a DeckWriter hard copy terminal. You know, one of the, it looked like a keyboard, it was kind of like a miniature desk, it was about the size of this mixer in this studio, big thing, and had an acoustic-coupled modem, and we would dial up to the university, log in, I don't know whose credentials they were, and we paid things like tic-tac-toe, and guess the word, and hangman. And every time you guessed a letter, it would have to reprint out the hangman noose with the new body part. So I was like, like a dot matrix printer.
That's okay. Right.
Guess a letter. And then you press, you know, P, enter. Just draw the whole thing. You are wrong. Guess another letter. And I had one of these things for a number of years. One of my former bosses was moving out and he gave me a DeckWriter 2 or 3. I can't remember which model it was.
Wow.
And I never used it. It was just a big, heavy, the only way I could get it out of my basement was to take it apart. And there were capacitors in there, the size of 12 ounce soda cans. Those things were magnanimously large.
Oh, be careful with those.
Well, what I did, and you may remember this in 2010 when I did the video about the home-built arc welder or plasma cutter.
Yeah.
He used those same capacitors in his homemade plasma torch.
Yeah, so again, be careful.
Be careful. Give them to somebody who knows what they're doing so they can blow themselves up.
Don't put your tongue on them.
Or screwdriver. Yeah. No, bad idea. So that was a long story about, and it led nowhere near anything nefarious. So if you've got any crazy hijinks, you can get in touch with us by calling the listener line, 707-530-2428. That's 707-530-CHAT. Email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. We'd love to see you. All of our contact information, of course, is available on the website at chuckchat.com/technorama. We are going to get out of here. Remember, there is no show next week. On Sunday, the 12th of August, I will be working remotely all week from Michigan.
And so we got two shows before DragonCon.
Yes, we do. 19th. We want to see you there at DragonCon. Remember, Saturday night, your whole Saturday night is ours. We are also in the midst of the dog days of podcasting, as you heard Dave Slusher talk about before. Dogdaysofpodcasting.com. You can find us over there. What have we got? About 20-some people doing it again this year? So even if you're not creating a podcast, you can still listen to all this fun. Some people have themes. Some people are shooting from the hip. Hey, it's a whole lot of fun.
There's 80 of them created so far.
80 episodes, not 80 podcasts. Right. 80 episodes.
That's true.
I did my number 5 today. Until then, Craig, give me a binary high five, and I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right. 101. See ya.